ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नारायणं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं चैव ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. Om. Good. Welcome back. We're continuing this current section. We're towards the end of the Aranyaka Parva. We have this wonderful dialogue between the Rishi Mudgala and the very strange character Durvasa. And if you remember what we've seen so far, Mudgala is living a life of extreme tapasya. He's living on gleaned grains. And the context for the story is Yudhishthira asks Vyasa, who has actually come, he asks, which is better? Is tapas better or is dana better? And then the story illustrates the value of dana charity, in which Mudgala, in spite of the fact that he's living on just a few gleaned grains, whatever he has, he gives to Durvasa. We've seen that, we won't go over it again. The next part of the story, which is the last part, which we're going to see today, is that Durvasa is, in spite of his perpetually bad mood, occasionally he gets pleased, and when he gets pleased, he gives a boon. So he gave a boon to Mudgala to go to heaven, and it happens immediately. Immediately after granting Mudgala the boon, then a Devaduta, a celestial messenger, arrives in a celestial chariot, Vimana, and he tells Mudgala, come on, you have earned, when I say that, you have earned, you remember these game shows on TV where you get, you know, what is behind curtain one and curtain two, and so a little bit like that. So Mudgala has earned a free trip, all expenses paid, not to Hawaii or someplace, a free all expenses paid trip to heaven. And this is offered to Mudgala. And we're going to see now his response, which is really surprising. Because you can imagine someone, imagine in one of these game shows, say, oh, you've won a all-expenses-paid trip, free trip to Hawaii. And can you imagine a contestant saying, thanks, but no thanks? That's exactly what Mudgala ends up doing. He ends up rejecting this gift of heaven. And in prior classes, we've discussed the issue of other religions being exclusively focused on going to heaven, and the very different approach Hinduism has. So we're going to go into that in some more detail in the last part of this chapter. I think we'll finish this chapter today. We'll see how it goes. So let's pick up the thread. Tam hevam vadi namrasham rishir. Tam hevam vadi namrasir. Devadutamuvachaha, Devadutamuvachaha, Swarge Swarga Sukham Kimcha, Swarge Swarga Sukham, Doshova Devadutaka, Doshova Devadut. All right. So, the Devaduta in the prior verse told Mudgala, you have won heaven by your karma. Please get in the chariot and I will take you to heaven. Mudgala replies, so tam evam vadinam, unto that Devaduta, who addressed him as such, rishihi uvacha, the rishi, Mudgala, Uvacha said to that Devadutam, to that celestial messenger. And what did he say? He said, Kim Swarge Swargasukam. Kim Swargasukam Swarge. What is the sukha, the pleasure that one enjoys in Swarga? What is the pleasure one enjoys in Swarga? Doshaha va Devadutaka, O Devaduta. What is the pleasure and doshaha va, and what is the defect? What are the good points of going to heaven, and what are the bad points of going to heaven? No one's ever really thought about what there are bad points of going to heaven. Mudgala considered this. He doesn't immediately say yes. He wants to inquire. This is really the sign of a thoughtful person who goes a little bit further. Also, we'll take a moment here to show something about the doctrine of karma you might not have thought about. Notice that because of Mudgala's good karma, he has earned heaven. So heaven now is his karmically determined future. So his karma is that he gets to go to heaven. Does he have to go to heaven? Interesting. We are all born with karmas, and it is often misunderstood that the karmas we're born with predetermine what's going to happen to us in life. It is absolutely false that your karmas predetermine what will happen to you in life. Why? You always have free will. Even as Mudgala's karma is go to heaven. But he has free will. He doesn't have to go to heaven. A good way of putting it is your karmas determine the situation you encounter, but your free will gives you freedom in how you respond to that situation. I'll say that again. Whatever situation you confront in life, we can say that situation is born of karma. Absolutely, we can say that. But you have free will in terms of how you respond to that situation. You are never totally helpless. You are never without free will, which therefore means we can never say karma determines everything in life. Utterly false. Which is a good thing, because we should exercise our free will and choose carefully, even when confronted with good situations. Here's the last observation. So on the surface, going to heaven looks really good, but now he's going to exercise his free will before he jumps into the chariot. In the same way, just as I was thinking about an example that perhaps you could relate to. I don't think we can exactly relate to a chariot coming to take us to heaven. That's a little bit of a reach. But here's an example that maybe you can relate to. Due to your karma, you receive an inheritance. Sounds good. On the surface, it sounds good. But the reality of that inheritance, and this happens in some families, you know this to be the case, in some families that inheritance leads to fighting among family members and siblings and all of this stuff. So is that inheritance a blessing or not? You had better, a nice American expression, think before you leap, is good advice. Because that inheritance may or may not turn out to be something good. So this is exactly what Mudgala is going to do. He's going to think before he leaps into that chariot. And one last time, please notice, his karma does not predetermine that he will go to heaven. He still has free will. Even though his karma has given him that free ride to heaven, he still has free will. And this is absolutely true in every avenue of life. Regardless of your karma, you still have free will in terms of how you respond to that situation. Okay. Devaduta vacha, devaduta. Nakshut pipase, naklanir, nakshut pipase. Nashitoshnabhayam tatha. Nashitoshnabhayam. Bhibhatsamashubham vapi. Bhibhatsamashubham. Roga vanatra kechana. Roga. So, Mudgala had asked the Devaduta, what are the pluses and minuses? What are the good parts and the bad parts about going? He said, sukha and dosha. What kind of happiness can be acquired in heaven? And what kind of dosha, what kind of problems are associated with heaven? Not surprisingly, Devaduta starts with the sukha. The dosha will come later for sukha. So he says, in heaven, nakshut pipase. There is no kshut, hunger, or pipasa, thirst. Na glanihi, there is no decay. Decay specifically meaning old age. So your life in heaven comes to an end, and we're going to discuss that at some length, but you don't get old in heaven, so you have that advantage. Na shita ushna bhayam, there's no fear of cold or heat. They have the thermostat set very nicely in heaven. There is no bhibhatsam, there's nothing disgusting in heaven. Nothing ashubham va api, nor anything unclean, unholy, nothing wrong. Rogaha va, nor is there any kind of illness, tatra kechana. Tatra, there in heaven, there is absolutely no kind of illness or problem of any sort. Idrisha samune lokaha, idrisha swakarma palahe tukaha, swakarma pala dushprapa parama siddhir, dushprapa parama agamya kama gocharaihi, agamya. Mune, O Muni, O Mudgala, saha lokaha, such a world, idrashaha, of this kind, such a heavenly world where there is no suffering, where there is no problem at all, no old age, no disease, no illness. Idrasha lokaha, such a world, is swakarma pala hetukaha. Such a world is the result, hetukaha, it is a result of swakarma pala, it's a result of your own karmas. Remember, in the prior chapter, we had seen that Mudgala lived this life of tapasya and dana. Tapas and dana. Tapas was his commitment to living on grains gleaned from the fields. He wouldn't even go begging for food. He would just go to the field, whatever grains were left, he would live on that very paltry, so he was definitely undernourished, a life of terrible tapasya. And he practiced dana, charity, giving whatever little bit he had, he gave to Durvasa. So based on his tapasya, his tapas and his charity, he was, his karmas, his punya karmas were such that he had earned going to heaven. And the Devaduta says, dushprapa, this siddhihi, this accomplishment of going to heaven, this is parama siddhihi, this is the highest goal, the highest result. Of course, who's saying this now? The Devaduta is saying this. It's a little bit like we gave that example, going to Hawaii. It's a little bit like a resident of Hawaii giving you a sales pitch for going to Hawaii. He's going to say it is absolutely the best place, parama siddhi. It is the highest goal. Of course, the Devaduta in the next verse is going to start talking about some defects. So maybe we have to take this a little figuratively. Because if it is parama siddhihi, if it is the highest goal, it should be free from defect. But in the coming two verses, the Devaduta himself is going to point out the primary defect in the concept that going to heaven is the absolute goal of life. So that defect is going to be pointed out, not yet. Here he says it is parama siddhihi. It is the highest goal. And it is most certainly dushprapa. It is very difficult to obtain. It is the most difficult goal to obtain. It is agamya. It is unachievable. Kama gocharaihi. By those driven by desire. By those driven by desire, it's impossible to go to. Interesting. If you have a desire to go to heaven, your very desire will prevent you from going to heaven. Because that desire will prevent you from collecting the punya karma you require to go to heaven. If you live a life molded by desire, you're going to be acting to serve yourself only. And by acting in such a way, there's no way you can accumulate the kind of punya karma required for going to heaven. So kama gocharaihi, by those who are driven by desire, going to heaven is agamya, absolutely unachievable. But Mudgala was not driven by desire, and due to his accumulation of good karma, he has the all expenses paid free trip to heaven. Etat swarga sukham vipra, etat swarga sukham. Loka nana vidhastata, loka nana vidha. Guna swargasya proktaste, guna swargasya proktaste. Doshan api nibodhame, doshan it. Vipra, O Brahman, O Mudgala, etat swarga sukham. This is the kind of happiness you can get in swarga. Lokaha nana vidhaha. This kind of sukha is found in many heavenly realms. There are many heavenly realms, lokaha nana vidhaha, of different kinds, and you have gotten the free ticket to one of those realms in which you are going to enjoy etat sukham, this heavenly, etat swarga sukham, this heavenly happiness you are going to enjoy. Now, gunaha proktaha te. Swargasya gunaha, the benefits of going to heaven, te proktaha, have been told to you. I have just now told you the benefits. Here, guna, quality, benefit. I've told you the benefits of going to heaven, but now, doshan api, but now, doshan, about the defects of going to heaven, the downside of going to heaven, nibodhame. Listen, as I tell you, what is the downside of going to heaven? Notice that Mudgala was careful to ask him for both. Most, you can imagine, go back to that game show, you've won a free trip to Hawaii. Is any contestant going to ask, what are the problems associated with going to Hawaii? No one's going to ask. So Mudgala asks. And Devaduta replies by telling him the defects of heaven. There's one primary defect, and that's going to be explained in the next two verses. Kritasya karmanas tatra, kritasya karman. Bhujyate yat palam divi, bhujyate yat palam. Nachan yat kriyate karma, nachan yat kriyate. Mulachedena bhujyate, mulachedena. Tatra, there, in heaven. Yat palam bhujyate, divi, tatra divi, there in heaven. Yat palam bhujyate, the karma pala that you are enjoying, the karma pala that you are enjoying is kritasya karmanaha, is the result of your actions done before. Now, this verse makes extensive reference to the three kinds of karma we've discussed in prior classes. Let's just review that very briefly so that we can get a clear idea of what this verse is teaching. We said there are three kinds of karma. We really need to be very clear. We talk of one kind is prarabdha. Prarabdha karma literally means that which has begun is prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karmas are those karmas which result in this life. This particular life, whatever unfolds, the good things and undesirable things, remember I used the word situation. The good and undesirable situations that we encounter in this life, from our birth to our death, all of those situations are determined by one kind of karma, that kind of karma being called prarabdha karmas. Prarabdha karmas are those with which you're born. As opposed to agami karmas, agami karmas are karmas also, a better term actually is used a little bit less frequently, but it's more descriptive. Kriyamana. Kriyamana literally means that which is being done. Agami suggests, agami is that which is to come. And what that means is, kriyamana karmas, those actions you're doing in this life, are agami in the sense that they will yield their results later, in the future. So kriyamana, newly committed karmas. Notice prarabdha karmas are from past lives. But in this life, are you doing any karmas? Certainly. Coming to class today is a karma. Punya or papa? Bad joke. So, in this, you're born with certain karmas, but then in this life, you continue to do new karmas, kriyamana karmas, and these karmas will yield their results in the future, therefore they're also called agami. When in the future? Possibly in this life. By the way, the actions you do in this life, don't assume that the karmas you're going to get always in the next life. There's no rule. We don't know. The results may come in this life, the results may come in another life. Then, there's a third category of karma that we call sanchitta. Sanchitta means accumulated karma. That's literally what it means, accumulated karma. And it means the karmas you have accumulated over an infinite number of prior lives. According to the doctrine of karma, you had no first birth. Think of the logical problem. If you're born because of karma, how do you get born the first time? It's illogical. So therefore, according to the doctrine of karma, there is no first birth. You have had, it's an infinite cycle or loop. You have had an infinite number of prior lives. In an infinite number of prior lives, you have accumulated an infinite amount of punya karma and an infinite amount of papa karma. That infinite accumulation of karma is called sanchitta. And one last detail, when you're born, your birth cannot be due to an infinite amount of karma. If you were born with an infinite amount of karma, how long would you have to live to exhaust all that karma? So you're not born with an infinite amount of karma, but rather a portion of this infinite karma gives rise to this life. That portion is prarabdha. Now you can see the role of these. So you have an infinite amount of accumulated karma. From that infinite amount of accumulated karma, a portion results in this life. And during this life, you can then accumulate new karmas on top of that. Now, the Devaduta, the divine messenger, makes reference to this doctrine of karma as he explains. He explains that kritasya karmanaha, because of the actions you've done in a prior life, bhujyate yat palam, the results of those actions committed before, bhujyate, are enjoyed, are experienced, tatra divi, in heaven. He didn't use the word, but he's clearly making a reference to prarabdha. Prarabdha are actions you've done before, and these are actions which have resulted in a life in heaven. This we have to understand. Your life is the circumstances of your life is determined by prarabdha karma. And what is taught, this is a very, very nice teaching, I think, very clear teaching. So, briefly we'll go through this in case you've forgotten or if you haven't seen this before. This sanchitta karma, as we said before, is an infinite accumulation of both good karmas and bad karmas, punya and papa. Therefore, when you're born with a subset, a finite amount of punya and papa karma. So instead of an infinite amount, let's say it's enough for 80 years. 80 years worth of karma, suppose. But 80 years worth of karma means the karma is a combination of both punya and papa. So it's commonly taught that if you have like 50% punya and 50% papa, that results in a human birth. This is a very common teaching. By the way, don't take 50% literally. This is not mathematics. It's just as an example. To be born with a combination of punya and papa karma is results in a human life, which means, roughly speaking, half of the situations we encounter in life are beneficial, and roughly half are not beneficial. I think for most people, it's punya is more than papa, but for some people, it's the other way around. So there's no it's not fixed. But suppose we explore the extreme cases. One extreme case would be 0% punya and 100% papa. Possible. That's a worst case. What kind of life would that be? That would be a life in which every situation you encountered was undesirable. That such a life cannot be found on this planet. Doubtful that such a life could be found in a human life. This is our definition of hell, Naraka. Honestly, this is our definition of hell. Please notice the definition then is not a place. The definition is in terms of experience. Hell is a life or an experience in which every experience is the result of papa karma. Every situation is driven by papa karma. That's our definition of hell. We look at the other extreme. Suppose you're born with prarabdha karma, which is 100% punya and 0% papa, which means every situation you encounter will be beneficial to you. No situation you encounter will be problematic for you. That certainly does not occur in this life, in this planet. This is our definition of heaven. This is our definition of svarga. And that's what our current topic is. So svarga, then, is a life based on 100% punya karma, 0% papa karma from past lives. Past lives means, remember, this is a portion of the sanchitta, the infinite punya and papa from an infinite number of prior lives. So as a result, Mudgala has a situation where he now enjoys 100% punya, 100%, actually a little more complicated. You want to get some detail here? Watch this, 2 minutes of detail, just to show the complexity of this doctrine of karma. So Mudgala was born as a human being. Is it possible? We just said it's not possible as a human being. So Mudgala was born like that. How does he get to go to heaven? You see the argument? Mudgala was born like this. How does he get to go to heaven? What about this one? he underwent so much tapasya. Tapas means to willingly undergo some suffering in life for the sake of your growth, spiritual growth. By the way, when you undergo suffering in life, every time you suffer, you are exhausting papa karma. Right? This is the doctrine of karma. Suffering is a result of the exhaust of the fructification of papa karma. The experience of suffering could usually the experience of suffering is unchosen by us. Most of us don't choose suffering. Mudgala did. That's called tapasya. Now you might wonder, why would someone in his right mind choose to suffer? Well, according to the doctrine of karma, by using his current karma to undergo suffering, he was exhausting his papa karma. And the tapas he underwent in life was so intense, he exhausted all of his papa karma. Further, he had done so much dana, charity, he had accumulated a lot more punya karma, and the culmination of the exhausting of his papa karma and the accumulation of so much punya karma is what won him the free ticket to heaven, so to speak. All right, this is just a little aside, just to show some of the details of this doctrine of karma. By the way, none of these details are spelt out in any scripture. It's a question some people ask. Swamiji, where can I go to learn about the doctrine of karma? There's no scripture or text on the doctrine of karma. What we have is a vast accumulation of stories that show the consequences of karma. And this story of Mudgala is one of those many, many stories that show the consequences of karma. And it's from this accumulation of stories that we infer all the details of the doctrine of karma. So it's not spelt out anywhere, but these laws can be inferred from all of these stories. Okay, now, last point to explain the first half of the verse. So Mudgala, because he has exhausted all of his papa karmas due to his tapasya, and because he has gained so much punya karma through his dana, through his charity, Mudgala now has 100% punya karma and 0% papa karma, which means his life will be a life in heaven. Now, that much is clear, but there's a little hitch. And the little hitch is this. This sanchita karma is infinite. But the karma that determines a particular lifetime, whether it's a lifetime in hell, whether it's a lifetime on earth, or whether it's a lifetime in heaven, that portion of sanchita is finite. It's limited. We said like 80 years worth, so to speak. Which means, if Mudgala has this 100% punya and 0% papa karma to go to heaven, is that karma infinite in quantity or finite in quantity? It is finite. It's pure punya and no papa, but it is finite in quantity, which ensures that a life in heaven, which is the result of good karma, that result, that life in heaven will absolutely come to an end when the good karmas that got you to heaven are exhausted. Now look at the doctrine of karma. Every time you suffer, you're exhausting a papa karma. Every time you enjoy something, you are exhausting a punya karma. Being in heaven, there must be so many things to enjoy. I won't give examples. Anyway, I'll get in trouble. So being in heaven, there are so many things to enjoy. Every time you enjoy something, you are exhausting some of that punya karma. eventually all of that punya karma gets exhausted. There's no papa karma, heaven, remember? So there's no papa karma, being heaven. All of the 100% of your punya karma has been exhausted. What is the consequence? Your life in heaven comes to an end, and you get reborn. And I, in a prior class, I mentioned that this doctrine is so utterly different from the biblical concept of heaven and hell. And I have to say very honestly that the biblical concepts of heaven and hell are absolutely illogical and unwarranted. It's silly. You know, how can your finite good deeds in this life, how can they earn you eternal reward in heaven? Your finite good deeds in this life, how can that earn you eternal reward? Similarly, your finite sins in this life, how can that condemn you to eternal damnation? Remember, the anecdote I've given here several times. When I was raised in a Roman Catholic, as a 7-year-old child, I had a nun teach me that if I committed sins and got run over by a truck tomorrow, I would go to heaven for all eternity. I would go to hell for all eternity. I was taught that when I was 7 years old. Tell me, what can a 7-year-old do that is so bad as to deserve eternal damnation? It's absurd. There's a second problem associated with the eternality of heaven and hell, a logical problem, and it is this. Anything that begins necessarily has an end. Anything that begins necessarily has an end, and the way we know that is anything that begins at some time. Mathematicians like this, T0. How's that? So anything that begins in time is the end of a prior condition. Every beginning is the end of a prior state or condition, which shows that anything that has a beginning necessarily has an end. And if this beginning suggests, if this beginning requires the end of a prior condition, we can be sure that this beginning will eventually culminate in a final condition and the beginning of a new condition. Anything that begins comes to an end. Can you give any counterexample? There are no counterexamples. Anything that has a beginning has an end. So, if heaven and hell have a beginning, how can they be claimed to be eternal states? So, in the Hindu tradition, we have heaven and hell. In fact, we do better than our Christian friends. We have 7 heavens and 7 hells in the mythology. You find in the Bhagavad Purana and elsewhere a description of no less than 7 heavens and 7 hells. But with regard to all of them, the conditions have a beginning, have an end. They have a beginning and end because they are all the result of finite karma. And that's exactly what the first half of this verse says. That kritasya karmanaha, because of your past actions, which means the portion of sanchita karma that finds its way into your prarabdha karma, this is yat palam bhujyate. This is the result, palam, the fruits of prior actions, which bhujyate, which is enjoyed, which is experienced, tatra divi, in heaven. Now, you might think, once you made it to heaven, what is that? I gave this story long ago. Let me see if I can recreate it for you. Suppose you get that all expenses trip paid to Hawaii. We'll go back to that. All expenses paid. But all expenses paid means what? They have paid your hotel room and all of that for 1 week. So you go to heaven, and with that much money to cover all of your expenses for 1 week. When your 1 week of funds are exhausted, then you have to come back. So that's the idea of going to heaven. But now suppose you're thinking, wait a minute, once I go to Hawaii, suppose I get a part-time job. You're clever, right? You're thinking, hey, if I get a part-time job, I can earn some extra money and extend my stay in Hawaii. Potentially, I should be able to extend my stay indefinitely if I earn enough money. In terms of the doctrine of karma, that means that having made it to heaven based on your finite prarabdha, suppose in heaven you accumulate more good karma. And as you are exhausting your good karma through every experience, through every pleasant experience, you exhaust some good karma. Suppose you do more good karmas. You accumulate more punya karma while you're in heaven, thereby making your stay in heaven potentially indefinite. There's a problem with that. He says, na cha anyat kriyate karma. While you're in heaven, anyat karma, more karmas, na kriyate, cannot be done. Anyat karma na kriyate, other karmas cannot be done. Why? In heaven, you have no free will. Very important teaching. They say that that heaven is a bhoga bhumi and not a karma bhumi. Bhumi, of course, means land or place. Bhoga bhumi means a place of enjoyment, a place of experience. Bhoga bhumi means a place of experience. Karma bhumi means a place of action. This is first and foremost karma bhumi. There is some bhoga also in this life, but our focus is on karma. In heaven, because you have no free will, you incur no further karmas. You cannot do a karma. Having no free will is like to be born as an animal. Animals have no free will. They have karma. They have good karmas and bad karmas. You've heard me give the example. A dog born in an alley in Delhi, that dog, that poor dog, is born as a result of a lot of papa karma. But that dog who is your so-called lap dog in some $10 million Manhattan apartment building, tell me, to be born as that dog? That dog lives better than you and me. So that dog's life is a result of punya karma. But please notice that in both cases, dogs have no free will. They incur no further karma. They have dogs exhaust karmas, the prarabdha karmas they're born with, they get exhausted, but dogs can commit no kriyamana karma, no agami, no animal can, no being without free will. Karma is predicated on free will. We've had this discussion before. We won't get into it again. Without free will, there's no such thing as karma. With free will, you commit karmas. Animals have no free will, therefore they commit no karmas, which means when a lion eats a defenseless animal, it's natural. It's not a papa karma. So too for the dogs, they're exhausting their punya and papa karmas. But here's the point. In heaven, you also have no free will. It's a bhoga bhumi. It's a condition in which you get to enjoy all the results of your past karmas. But you have no free will, and therefore you can commit no new karmas, which means you cannot prolong your stay in heaven by doing good karmas and accumulating new punya karma. How do we know this? Well, what did I just say about how do we know anything about the doctrine of karma? We learn about the doctrine of karma from all these stories, including the story of Mudgala. And what do we see in the story of Mudgala? Nacha anyat kriyate karma. It tells us that in heaven, the Devaduta is telling us, in heaven, no further karmas can be committed. So this is how we learn about the doctrine of karma. So in heaven, mula chedena bhujyate, you merely bhujyate, you enjoy the results of your past karmas, mula chedena, by exhausting chedena, by the exhausting of the mula of the of that basic karma with which you're born. Mula here represents prarabdha. Prarabdha chedena, mula chedena. By exhausting your past karmas, you then enjoy your life in heaven, but na cha anyat kriyate karma. You cannot do any new karmas. You cannot extend your stay in heaven, which means when that when your prarabdha karma comes to an end, your life in heaven comes to an end. Then what happens? Sukavyaptamanaskanam. Sukavyaptamanaskanam. Patanam yachamudgala. Patanam yach. Asantosha parit paritapo. Asant parita drishtva deepta tara shriyaha. Drishtva. In the second line, Mudgala, the Devaduta, the messenger addresses Mudgala. O Mudgala, yatcha patanam, that falling. Falling means what? A nice American expression, whatever goes up must come down. Heaven, figuratively speaking, is up. So that patanam, patanam means falling. So that patanam, patanam for who? Falling for whom? Sukha vyapta manaskanam. For those whose minds, manas, those whose minds are vyapta, pervaded by sukha, by happiness. Those people who have been enjoying their time in heaven, they experience patanam. Just as when you go to Hawaii, then you have to come back. And imagine you go to Hawaii in January and then you come back to Newark Airport in the middle of this cold and miserable New Jersey winter. And how would you feel? It says here, asantoshaha. They're going to be very unhappy, very displeased. Paritapaha. They'll be afflicted when you leave heaven. Because it's such a glorious condition of experience, anything that follows is going to be miserable in comparison. Drishtva deepta taraha shriyaha. Having seen the shriyaha, the glories, deepta taraha, the most glorious of glories, drishtva, having seen them, having experienced all of that in heaven, whatever comes after heaven is going to seem miserable by comparison, right? Which means what? Means that the life after heaven is going to be terrible, miserable. That's the point. In fact, look at this. You're in New Jersey in December, and it's cold and miserable, but you're coping. Then you go to Hawaii, and you come back after a week. And as bad as New Jersey seemed before your trip to Hawaii, it seems 10 times worse after your return. That's exactly the point that the Devaduta is making. So he tells all of this to Mudgala, who responds, Mudgala uvacha, patanam tanmahadukham, patanam tadmaha, paritapa, sudarunaha paritapa sudha Swarga bhajascha vantiha, swarga bhajascha vantiha. Tasmat swargam nakamaye, tasmat swargam nakamaye. Tan patanam, that falling from heaven, mahadukham, is a source of great suffering. And those who undergo that great suffering will be parittapaha. They'll certainly be extremely afflicted. Sudarunaha. Daruna means fierce. Sudaruna. Extremely fierce suffering they will undergo in their next life, having given up the glories of heaven and having returned to New Jersey. And swarga bhajaha cha chavanti iha. He says swarga bhajaha, those who enjoy the glories of heaven, iha, here to this human life, chavanti, they fall. They necessarily fall. Those who have enjoyed heaven necessarily fall back to some other life, including this human life. Tasmat, therefore, Mudgala concludes, swargam na kamaye. Na kamaye, I do not want swargam. I do not want to go to heaven. Huh. Why? The point of this whole argument is going to heaven is temporary. And after it's over, you'll be more miserable than you were before. These are the two arguments. One is going to heaven is temporary. Two is you'll be more miserable after you return. But now, Mudgala is going to make some very important comments in his next verse. So if he doesn't want heaven, what does he want? Yatra gatva na shochanti, yatra gatva na shochanti, na vyatanti chalanti va, na vyatanti chalanti, taraham sthanam atyantam, taraham sthanam, marga yashyami kevalam, marga yashyami kevalam. In the end, he says, marga yashyami, I will seek, kevalam, only, I will seek only tatsthanam in the second line. I will seek only tatsthanam, that condition, that life. What will he seek? He says, I won't seek heaven, swargam nakamaye, I will not seek heaven, but marga yashyami, I will seek, tatsthanam, that place. Now go back to the top. I will seek that place, yatra, which, gatva, having gone to that place, I will seek that place, yatra gatva, having gone to which, na shochanti, there will be no more suffering. Having gone to which place, there will be no suffering. Notice there's no qualification in terms of time, which means suffering will have permanently come to an end. Na vyatanti. So having gone to that place, I want to go to a place where there's no further vyatanti, where one won't worry again. If you're in heaven, this is very, very typical Vedantic analysis. Whenever you're enjoying something, you know the enjoyment is finite. You know it's going to come to an end. If you go to Hawaii for a week, you're ticking down days on the calendar, and you're unhappy as the last day comes closer and closer, showing that even the happiness of Hawaii is tainted with sadness. It's a Vedantic argument. All happiness is tainted with sadness, because any worldly happiness comes to an end, and since that worldly happiness will come to an end, it's tainted with sadness. But he wants a happiness, navyatanti, where there's no being tainted with sadness. There's no worry about that happiness coming to an end. Na chalanti cha, and there's no leaving it. There's no leaving that happiness behind, which means a condition of unending freedom from suffering. A condition of unending freedom from suffering. He says, Tadaham, aham, I, marga yeshyami, I seek, kevlam, I seek that alone, tatstanam, that stanam only, which is atyantam, that supreme condition. What is he describing here? We call it moksha. We define moksha as a condition of utter freedom from suffering. There's a little hitch here. We've said before, anything that begins comes to an end. He says, I seek that moksha, which is atyantam sthanam, that supreme condition in which there is utter and complete freedom from suffering now and forever. If moksha has a beginning, what? It must have an end. Absolutely. This is pure Advaita Vedanta, which is what's being taught here. If moksha has a beginning, moksha is utter and complete freedom from suffering. If moksha has a beginning, it must have an end. Then what are we doing in these classes? Aham moksha yeshyami. Marga yeshyami. I'm seeking moksha. If you're seeking a condition that has a beginning, it's going to come to an end. So how do we understand this? Watch, this is some pure Vedanta, which is something very profound. I'm looking at the clock. I'm not sure if we're going to finish this today or not. This needs to be explained properly. If we don't finish it, we'll continue it next week. Let's absolutely clear. If moksha has a beginning, it has an end. But then you hear people say all the time, yes, I got enlightened on such and such a date. In fact, Pujya Swamiji used to poke great fun of people who would say, I got enlightened on such and such a date. Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, I got enlightened. So if moksha begins at Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, that moksha is absolutely going to come to an end. That's not Vedanta's definition of moksha. How does Vedanta understand moksha? Here's the point. Your true nature, consciousness, the consciousness which existed before your birth, the consciousness that will exist after your death, that consciousness is unborn. That consciousness is unchanging. That consciousness is boundaryless, limitless, full and complete, and has always been so. Your consciousness does not become limitless, full and complete. Your consciousness has always been limitless, full and complete. And you know, you've heard, in fact, earlier today I've made reference to your divine nature is the truth of who you are. No, no, what I said before was, in the meditation session, I said the Mahavakyas are all in the present tense. Tattvamasi, you are that. It is never said you will become that. Tattvamasi, you are that. Not tattvam bhavishyasi, you will become that. The Mahavakya is a statement of an already existent fact or truth. you are already full and complete. Your true nature is already vast, boundless, full, and complete. Meaning what? Your true nature does not need moksha. Your true nature, Sri Shankaracharya had the term for it. He said, nitya muktaha, eternally free. This is a term that Sri Shankaracharya loved to use. He used it very frequently. Your true nature is nitya mukta shuddha, nitya mukta shuddha. I'm missing one word. Buddha, thank you. Nitya shuddha buddha mukta subhava. Your true nature is nitya muktaha, eternally free. Nitya shuddha, eternally pure. Nitya buddhaha, eternally enlightened. Meaning, Atma does not gain moksha. Moksha is an already existent truth of who you are. Your true nature is mukta, which means free. You have always been free. You have never been bound. You have never been subject to suffering. Then what is this all about? And the fact is that you don't know that truth about yourself. There is ignorance with regard to your true nature as being eternally free, eternally liberated, eternally free from suffering. That truth about yourself is unrecognized, unacknowledged, undiscovered. And because you haven't discovered or recognized your true nature as already free, you then judge yourself to be bound and subject to suffering. But to judge yourself to be bound and subject to suffering is due to ignorance. Then what happens is you find the stuff called Vedanta, and somehow it manages to remove that ignorance. The ignorance that caused you to judge yourself to be bound and subject to suffering. With the help of the teachings of Vedanta, you discover your true nature to be nitya muktaha, eternally free, and it's over. Now, notice we call that moksha, but we have to put moksha in quotation marks. Because your true self is nitya mukta, eternally free, but you didn't know it. When you discover the already existent fact of your eternally liberated nature, that discovery is figuratively called moksha. Why? Because you experience great freedom with that discovery. Moksha means freedom. And with the destruction of that ignorance, with the discovery of your true self being eternally free, you experience tremendous freedom. Therefore, it's called moksha. But please note that Atma was never bound. Therefore, Atma never got moksha. This is why moksha doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an end. There is a beginning, but is it the beginning of when you become enlightened? We use that term. So what was that? 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. So what happened 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning? On that Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, did Atma become limitless? So Atma was limited at 9 o'clock, and then at 10 o'clock, Atma becomes limitless. You get the idea. Atma was limitless before, Atma is limitless after. It doesn't change at all. So then what happened at Tuesday at 10 o'clock? Atma did not become limitless. What happened Tuesday at 10 o'clock is you finally figured out that I am that Atma. Tuesday at 10 o'clock, ignorance was removed. Your true self was discovered. That's what enlightenment is. Enlightenment means what? Gaining knowledge. Gaining knowledge means what? The destruction of ignorance. So Tuesday at 10 o'clock, it's not that Atma became limitless, but rather the ignorance, which is the result of suffering, was destroyed at Tuesday at 10 o'clock. And what follows then is a condition of total freedom from suffering. But please notice that that condition is for the mind. The mind becomes freed from suffering. Atma has always been free from suffering. So this is how we understand moksha. If moksha, just last point before we wrap up the class, if moksha has a beginning, absolutely it comes to an end. Based on this discussion, you know Atma is nitya mukta. Atma does not gain moksha at Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning, but rather what happened at Tuesday at 10 o'clock was what? Ignorance was destroyed. The true nature of yourself was discovered, and with that discovery, suffering comes to an end. Now you understand properly. We have a little bit left. We'll see in the next class. And then we'll begin the next section of the Aranyaka Parva, which is the famous Yaksha Prashna. Yeah, everyone likes that section. I'm not sure why, but anyway, it's an interesting section. It's a wonderful story. And some very interesting teachings. We'll see that in our next class. Some closing announcements. Sunday, tomorrow, at 11 o'clock, we have our program for children. At 5 o'clock, we have the mindful movement and meditation session. By the way, those of you who like that meditation we did this morning, this 5 o'clock session is an extension of that. Uses the same techniques. You'll enjoy it very much. And then at 6:15 tomorrow, I'll be conducting a musical meditation, which means using mantras and stotras in a very quiet, meditative manner. It'll be a long meditation based on mantras. And that's all tomorrow. 2 weeks ago, I had asked for volunteers for cleaning and for helping our children. Many of you came forward to help, and I thank you very much. We really needed that help, and you all kicked in, as we say, and came forth to volunteer. I think Vasanti has organized some project after class, so those of you who have volunteered for the cleaning, perhaps you can meet with Vasanti after class today. Also, some of you have offered to help. We want to do our arati in more of an, I use the word like they do in Rishikesh. I have such fond memories of how they do in Rishikesh, using a gong, using damaru, and using some other things. So those of you who have volunteered to help with the gong, why don't you stay back for a few minutes today, and we'll see if we can figure out how to do that properly, and then maybe we can start doing that very soon. Library will be open after class. We'll conclude with our prayers.